Welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Hi, Jennifer. Good to be with you again, as always.
Well, thank you. It's always good to chat with you. And, you know, during...
Always? You mean there was never a time when there was a little conflict?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think so.
Interesting.
Well, so, you know, we talk about learning on this podcast all the time. Is learning always easy and pleasant? No.
No.
Is it always impactful and important? Yes.
Yes.
So not every moment of every discussion will be
impactful.
You know,
are you saying that I'm saying gibberish?
No.
How dare you? Now we're getting into conflict.
Not every moment of every interaction will be daisies and, you know, candy.
I see.
But... But they're all good because they're all impactful and we all learn from them, right?
Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry to be torturing you through our podcast. Please.
No, it is great fun.
Yes.
Now, one of the things, though, that we do tease each other about a little bit is age.
Yes.
You think you're old. You're not.
I'm ancient.
Okay, everybody, he's not ancient.
There are rocks on Southwestern University's campus that actually are younger than I am. That's how old I am.
Dr. Ed Berger is not old, but our discussions about age have sort of woven themselves into several episodes of Higher Ed. So I thought it'd be interesting to actually talk about the concept of age and learning, because I think, you know, the idea persists out there that somehow magically at whatever age 4 or 5, we're ready to go to kindergarten to start learning. And then at 18 or 21 or 22, we're sort of magically ready to stop and school ends and we're kind of done. And that there's certain points during that timeline when we're better equipped to learn things or not. And that's not really true.
You know, it's so interesting. Two thoughts came into my head as you were just saying your little soliloquy there.
Was that, oh, goodness, look at the time.
It's time to
we're
go.
Done.
No, but two things. First of all, one is that I've always said that if I were ever king of the world at an institution, which you would think maybe as president I would be, but really I'm not. I'm the lowest person on the kind of pyramid. But if I had that ability, I would say that every student that goes to an undergraduate education would first take a year off, like a gap, but they're called a gap year, but a gap year where you work. So, I mean, of course, traveling is wonderful, and I love the idea of going abroad, and I'm not saying that those are bad things, but working. It could be at a fast food restaurant. It could be a barista at a coffee place. It could be in a department store. But the idea of working to appreciate what could happen with one's education. And my dream would be that when you apply at the Berger Academy, in fact, staple to your application would be at least one year of a 1040 tax form that you yourself filled out, not working for your family's company, but working somewhere on your own. The other thought was something that happened to me when I was giving a workshop years and years ago on math to math teachers. Do you want to hear this?
Yes.
Okay. So it talks about kind of when we teach things. And we were talking about when we teach geometry, which is usually done somewhere in high school.
Yes.
Okay, you learned it somewhere, probably ninth or 10th grade. So the question is that the right time to teach geometry?
So my question back would be, how do you know when it's the right time?
That's way too hard of a question, so I'm certainly not going to answer that.
I want to know about your story, though.
Well, here's the story. Yeah. The story was, as I was talking to these educators, this was actually in Clark County, which is a very fancy way of saying Las Vegas. But it was a bunch of math educators from Nevada. And their comments provoked the following thought that I had, which is the person who invented that type of geometry was Euclid. Euclid was this amazing mathematician, you know, ancient Greek mathematician. Actually, you want to hear a quick trivia about ancient Greeks?
Sure.
Okay. You know, Plato and Socrates and Aristotle, the whole gang. Here's this. I didn't know this till recently. The ancient Greeks, and this is true, you can look it up. The ancient Greeks were not ancient during their time.
What does that mean?
They were modern people at the time.
Well, sure, right.
They became ancient in the millennia that followed. But as a result, the fact that we call them ancient Greeks, it gives them kind of this romanticized sense of the society. It was just basically the same group of people that are running around today, but they were just doing things a little bit differently. And Euclid, who was the discoverer of these things, the truth is he discovered these things at a very old age. He was actually quite old. Uh-huh. He was kind of an old guy. where did it happen that all of a sudden it made sense to teach this to people that were in kind of high school age? Maybe our brains aren't physically mature enough to understand the complexities of two triangles being congruent or the idea of circles and tangents and secant lines. I mean, if the person, the brilliant person who discovered it for himself was in fact an old person, maybe we should be teaching geometry at the senior citizen homes and the old age homes. And that's the time you should be facing geometry. Where is it that we should be teaching that content long, long, long earlier before the person who actually discovered it discovered it?
Well, I mean, it seems like that, at least in the United States, the education system is set up from a time when people lived, life expectancy was much shorter, and we were a primarily agricultural society.
So we better get to those similar triangles really early before people die.
We've got to get to them quick, and we've got to get...
Some people would have loved to have died without having the similar triangle things. In fact,
well,
I think they killed some people.
Yeah,
exactly.
No kidding. And we've got to get young people in and out of school fairly quickly because we need them to work.
And this is the problem. The problem is that education was defined and still is defined to be content driven and focused when in fact it should be mindfulness and habits of thinking focused. It doesn't make a difference when you learn about two triangles being similar and the Pythagorean theorem. What is important is what are the mind skills that thinking about those ideas and, by the way, other ideas and alternative ideas could offer that in fact would be impactful to one's life and living a life where their vocation would flourish when they start to go into the workforce.
So I want to say a statement and then you tell me if this is true or false or if I'm somewhere in between.
Very good.
The content of any given fact or theory or idea that we learn is not necessarily related to our chronological age, but it's related to the habits and skills of learning we've acquired when we hear it as to whether we can really absorb it or not.
I think that's absolutely right.
So in theory, you could learn about geometry in 8th, 9th, 10th grade as long as somewhere along the way before that you've had a teacher or a mentor or somebody talking to you about sort of how to learn and how to build habits.
That's exactly right. I think that content is a conduit to deeper understanding and to deeper mind sharpening. And yeah, I mean, there are some basic principles of geometry that every citizen, you know, should know just because if you're going to look at things, you want to understand which is bigger and so forth. But some of the technical things, the law of cosines, for example, which is – no. Your headphones almost flew off your head.
I just hadn't heard that word in a long time.
The law of cosines is a beautiful thing that generalizes the Pythagorean theorem, and I love it, and a lot of, you know, people that are interested in math love it. But the truth is you can live a completely fulfilling life without actually remembering the law of cosines. Even though you saw it at one time, you don't know it today. So what was the point of that education if all you were doing was learning facts that you quickly threw away – versus a way of processing, a way of understanding deeply, a way of making meaning. That's what education should be about.
So do you remember the TV show Doogie Howser?
Yes, MD.
MD.
Yes.
When he went to medical school, but he was like 15.
He was like 2 years old. He was in diapers.
But he was really young for med school. But the whole sort of shtick of it was, oh, look how young he is. That's so unusual. That's so weird. But gosh, it sounds like that wouldn't have to be that unusual if people sort of embraced thinking about habits and ways of learning more than focusing on just the content.
What's more unusual is that now he's hosting the Oscars. That's a little bit more unusual. That's right. That's exactly right. It's not a content thing. And doesn't make a difference what we teach people in their formal education in terms of the subject matter. And that's why people pick their majors and so forth. And in fact, it doesn't even matter what you major in. The point is building these habits. Now, when one becomes a lifelong learner, which should be an ongoing process, and their formal education is over, well, there's an opportunity to engage in ideas that you're drawn to. I never took art history when I was an undergraduate because I wasn't ready for it. As an adult, years ago, I thought, wow, I'm really missing something. I started taking art history courses, reading art history books, and now I'm engaged in art history and art. Well, I was ready for it at a later age. Like Euclid was ready for discovering mathematics and geometry and number theory at a later age. We should be open to that reality and not think that what's best for a young person is to know these facts.
So I think I'm ready for the next math hanger.
This actually is something that a friend of mine, a colleague here at Southwestern University, he's in the education department, shared with me.
Okay.
And I hated it. So I figured if I hate it, then why not – share the misery.
Well, with that intro, let's go.
But it kind of gets back to the ancient Greeks, so it's actually perfect.
All right,
that's right.
Good, great.
So imagine that an ancient Greek who wasn't ancient at the time took a stick in the sand and drew a straight line in the sand.
All right,
I'm watching Jennifer do that.
I'm drawing
very
a straight line.
Very good. You drew a straight line in the sand.
Okay.
Okay, and now the challenge is, without touching that line, without erasing the line, without doing any damage to that line, how can you make that line shorter? That's the riddle.
So without touching the line.
Correct.
Or doing any damage to the line.
Correct.
How do you make it shorter?
So you can't erase part of the line.
Oh.
You can't.
I can't take sand and dump it on the
correct.
End.
Correct. Oh. Yes. But that's a all but right. See, it's a great guess.
See, I thought, well, can I just shovel some onto the line without me touching the line?
So I'll tell you all the guesses I had. When he shows to me, he drew a piece of paper just like that. So the first thing I did was I took the paper and I folded it so that the line actually became a little shorter.
Okay.
I said, oh, no, you can't do that. It's in the sand. And
right.
I said, well, what if you looked at it askew, like you put your eye at ground level and you looked at it, it would seem shorter. He said, no, that's not allowed. I came up with about three outstanding answers. He rejected all of them. So the answer I want is the answer that he gave me.
Okay, so you're looking for – all right. Well, we will tackle that in a future episode of
How
Higher
do you make
Ed.
The line shorter without touching it?
Oh, this is a good one. All right. My
no,
mind
it's
is
not.
Working on
– It is not. I hate this
not
one.
A good one.
It's my least favorite one.
It's not a good one.
But now you're all going to feel miserable too.
Oh, good. Well, misery loves company, right?
I hope so.
Right. So we're just about out of time. I want to wrap up our discussion about age and learning. But you know what's occurring to me is – we're talking about sort of chronological age, but also I'm going to call it, I don't know, intellectual age, maybe for lack of a better phrase. But, you know, sort of running parallel to those is also what else happens to people sort of socially, culturally at different ages. People, you know, their bodies are maturing, they're taking jobs, they're moving, you know, things happen outside of the education sphere. Not that education is a separate thing, but you know, so much is going on in people's lives all the time as they age.
Here's my thinking. My thinking is that it's all about kind of confidence and being comfortable in one's own skin. And that the older you get, the less you care about what other people think about what you say or what you do. But you can kind of be more yourself and you're comfortable. And you're comfortable in exposing yourself to new ideas and to challenging yourself and to saying, I don't quite understand that. And not to feel somehow that your understanding is tethered to who you are and your as a human being in terms of your worth. And as a result, you become more curious, you become more open-minded, you become more thoughtful. I think is this the reality? Look, when you're really young, you're making fun of someone because they're wearing glasses. Then you get to a certain age, you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why am I making fun of that person? The same thing it is as we get more and more mature. When I give lectures, and I've run programs for senior people, math programs, and they always say, oh, I love this math, and this is so neat. Why didn't they? I wish you were my math teacher. Well, I'm not sure that if I had been their math teacher, they wouldn't have had a similar experience to what they did have. But maybe now they're more open to it. Now they're more relaxed. They know there's no exam. And they can say, wow, I'm going to look at this suite of ideas for the sake of just learning something beautiful and interesting. And all of a sudden, worlds open up.
Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. Ed, thank you for helping us keep our brain sharp and opening up some worlds.
Always
for
a pleasure.
You can find out more at southwestern.edu and keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. And you can find Higher Ed on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.